So that was a little bit easier for
him. Yeah, I think, because, you know, we played a lot of day games, they don't play that anymore.
Yeah. And no doubleheaders anymore.
No. No, only if you got a rain down.
Yeah.
Because they have to make them because you got no days off, you're playing 7 days
a week.
So in that sense, it was nicer. But on the other sense, too, is that long road trips.
Yeah.
In those days, we'd go and play a four, Friday night, Saturday, and up ever since, you'd play four games with these people.
What life on the road, what was that like? Because that's something that's unique to you guys. It's not, probably, maybe basketball players a little bit, but football players don't have a life on the road. You know, they go, but baseball players may be unique.
It was unique. All I can speak is for our team, the New York and the Browns, and mostly New York. But it was quite enjoyable, because we'd leave New York and we'd get on the train. We'd all have sleepers.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd get in there, read a book, and go to bed. And there would be a dining car in there. We'd all eat in the dining car. We'd all eat together. We'd all talk baseball. We'd go to bed, get the next morning, be in a city, and get in a cab, and go to the hotel, and you'd be there. All the hotels during that time had lobbies with seats and chairs.
Mm-hmm.
We would sit around. Nobody would bother us. We'd talk, and we'd eat in the hotels and everything like that. Today, some ball players don't even stay at the same hotels. Some ball players have their own private rooms, don't want a room with anybody else. And it was all different types of things. And we had all, I remember Rizzuto, myself, and Yogi, a lot of us guys, loved to go to the movies. So we'd go to movies every day and go see the game, and that night play the ball game. And then you'd come back to the hotel.
You didn't play video games, not like they do today.
No video games, no loud records, machines, anything like that. But none of that stuff that came about. But you'd sit and watch television. Television would go off at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you'd go to sleep. But you'd stay up. And some guys would sleep late in the morning because they had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And some guys would get up early, like me. I'd get up early in the morning, go down, have breakfast, and and sit and read the newspaper, and then come back up after a while.
So there's kind of a rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
That you got.
A regular routine that you would do.
Yeah.
We could get walk down the streets and nobody would bother you like they, today they'd overwhelm you. Here comes a Yankee ball player, here comes Boston Red Sox or, Dodgers, somebody, they just overwhelm you. You just got to go hide.
Yeah. But it was obviously a different lifestyle when you were home again. Is that like going to work?
Yeah. and when you're home, then it's just like a regular job. A lot of guys didn't bum around when you were home because they all lived in separate places. They all went home to their families and everything. They'd carpool into the ballpark and things like that.
Yeah.
But it was an entirely different. It was like a 9-to-5 job.
Hmm. But the road trips were, it sounded like you lived with these guys.
Yeah.
And so you were together all the time.
Yeah.
So
it was a lot. The way I could really emphasize what it was like, it's like playing college baseball, high school baseball. We hung around with the guys when you go on the road, and the families weren't involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a lot of crazy things, laugh and having fun. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm having sex with everybody all night. Some guys were like that, some guys weren't.
Yeah, it'd be tempting to be out there and be a hero type.
Yeah.
What was it like for your kids, Bob? Is that something they adjust to? That's what Dad does?
Of course, the first son was born in 54 when I was with Baltimore.
Hmm.
So it took him about 3 years before he knew what it's about.
Yeah.
But, he still talks today to going down to St. Petersburg. My oldest son, Terry, talks about playing with Whitey Ford's kids.
Is that right?
Yeah. Kids, and they all played baseball and things like that.
Yeah.
Then I used to take the two sons that were born at that time and take them to Yankee Stadium when they get a little older. And we'd play baseball out in the center field. When nobody was in the stands, and we'd go out and play around the monuments, and we'd do a lot of things, and they remember all of that.
And it was meaningful for them even at that young age.
Yeah, it was good memories for them. They can remember all of that. And then I remember when I went to Los Angeles Angels, I took the oldest boy with me. He went on the road with us, the bat boy for the Angels.
Oh, really?
He wore Allie
Pearson.
Abby,
yeah.
Because Albie. So
yeah.
Albie, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was so little that his uniform fit my son real good. He was the bad boy. He wore his uniform.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's jump ahead to that little bit. You were with the Yankees through 62.
Right.
And obviously, you know, just the way you talk, I mean, it might sound, the pride of the Yankees might sound corny, but nevertheless, obviously it was there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then 63, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How did that...
Well, that was kind of, that's a sad point in your life.
I had
my arm operated on at the end of the 61 season. Yeah, 61 season. And then I pitched in 62, but I didn't get to pitch much because that... I didn't pitch much in, well, either 61 or 62.
Yeah, and 72 innings in 61 and 69 innings in 62.
Yeah. I had a bad arm. My arm got hurt in the Pittsburgh World Series when we got beat. That was 1960. Mm,
that's the Mazeroski.
Right. And so I didn't pitch much in 61 because the arm was pretty sore. And I pitched some games, some games good, some games bad. So then I had to operate on at the end of the 61 season. And then 62 came back with them, and I pitched a little bit. But I didn't get to pitch a lot.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more you got to pitch. Because when you get older, it takes your muscles really got to be worked on. They don't come back as much as
not
they
as
do.
Elastic.
Yeah. That's why you see guys like Clemens. They have a workout schedule that'll kill you. They have to do that just to stay in shape, like the 25-year-old has. They got it naturally.
Gotcha. Yeah. Nolan Ryan was another one of those.
Nolan Ryan. And football. You got Rice, and you got a lot of guys like that. But anyway, I didn't get to pitch much, and so I then asked Ford Frick permission to go to Puerto Rico to play baseball.
I did see an article about that.
He allowed me to go down there. And I pitched the opening night at the Roberto Clemente Stadium because Roberto got killed.
Oh, really?
And so I went out and pitched that opening night.
Yeah.
And I was only down there 2 days because it was in the World Series. It's a start. I was 2 days. I got down and pitched the first game. Came back to the hotel, and in those days they had little cubby holes where they put your keys. And phone messages, and there was a pink message in there for me. They handed it to me, read it from Roy Haney, and said, "You've been traded to Los Angeles Angels." That's all I ever heard from the Yankees. That was very disheartening because I had pretty
You
much
were a Yankee.
Yeah. Well, I had, you know, I'd done a lot for the club. Lying, stealing. I was a player representative.
Sure.
I could go on and on. So I thought I was really committing to the team and everything. I even talked to management at that time, and I won't get into names who I talked to. But I said, "Look, let me go down to Puerto Rico and I'll pitch. And then I'll get my arm in better shape and come back spring training and keep me on the roster, or take me off the roster if you want to. And when I go down there, if it doesn't work out, then you can make me a coach or something in baseball." So they kind of didn't agree, but didn't say no. It's kind of like, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then when I'm down there, you know, just 2 days and gone, you know I was traded a long time before that. But they can't announce it until after the World Series.
Oh, wow.
So while they were agreeing with me, they knew I was going to be gone.
Yeah. So you had to feel a little bit.
I thought I got let down very much.
Yeah.
But as I matured in life a little bit further in the business world, I understood it. So it didn't bother me no more.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it's one that I'll prove you some of the guns I can really do it. You know, and that's another thing I say in the motivational book. I said most people are driven, successful people. Are driven because they want to prove something to somebody. They're not driven for money. They're driven because they want to prove something somewhere in life, their mother, father, brother, maybe a coach or somebody. I told them they were no good and they never could do it. And they're driven by to do something good to prove that they're
wrong.
Most people are like that way. And if you know what the key is, if you're in management like I am and motivational, then you play upon that and you really get a lot out of people. But anyway.
The best they got.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Well, I want to talk about that a little bit, too. You ended up with the Red Sox that year.
Right. Around July, something like that, the Angels released me. They weren't going anywhere. And I was probably the highest paid pitcher on the club. And they released me. I remember Gene Autry, who was an idol as a kid.
Me too.
Yeah, come out there and sit on the bench with me. He was actually tears and crying. He said, "I don't want you to go, Bob. I want you," because he loved the Yankees. And he said, "I'm so sorry." He said, "I had no part of this decision. If I did, you'd still be here." But they cut down and brought some other kids and stuff like that. Same time, Boston wanted to sign me, but I had to wait until, I think it's 7 days expire. So see if nobody picks you up.
Oh, on the waivers?
Yeah, on the waivers.
Yeah.
And so that didn't occur. And so then they told me to come up, and I signed and pitched the rest of the year with that. Then when the season was over, they came to me and said, well, look, we'd like you to be the pitching coach here. You know, of course, and then you can stay in baseball. And
is that something on your list of things that you might want to do?
Some of the things that I wanted, you know, until you, when you get in, a lot of things. But yeah, you know, they said, you can pitch too if you want to. So I got in real good shape. I was in excellent shape, went to UMA, Arizona. But to do my job good as a pitching coach is an all-time, it's all-consuming.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't do that. And so I went up there, and I was a pitching coach for that ball club.
Okay.
And that was 1964.
Now, I thought I read something that you there was a little bit of a comeback thing that you...
Well, I went from there, and then Paul Richards called me. And he wanted me to, they were going into Houston in a new ballpark, and he was the general manager and manager.
Houston, yeah.
Yeah, and he wanted me to go come down spring training, and because I was fairly young at that time, so mm-hmm. that was, I was only 34 years old. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to come down here and pitch. And if it didn't work out too well, he was going to make me a coach. And so I was in the spring training with him down there. First two or three games, I pitched real well because I had always been in spring training in shape. I never went out of shape. I didn't go down there and get killed.
Yeah.
And so I did well. And then I pitched in mediocre. But what happened to me is that I didn't get tired. I mean, I didn't get sore. I didn't care whether I won or lost. And you lose that winning attitude, and I knew this was it with me.
Yeah, so that part of it was, we talked earlier about the body mm-hmm. and the mind, yeah. Both of them are important, and yeah. And the so need to win.
Yeah, I didn't bother me if I lost. Mm. I wasn't happy if I won.
Yeah.
You know, that big winning desire was gone, and then right about 4 days, 5 days before spring camp broke up, they called me in and they want me to go to Durham, which was their, I don't know what minor league team was. Then we go down there and pitch and get myself in real good shape pitching there, and then they bring me back. And then they said, well, if you don't win there, down there, then we'll bring you back as a coach. So, you know, I was almost tempted to do that until about 30 minutes after that, all the writers came around me, Durham writer and everything. And about I was going to be the opening day pitcher and all that kind
so
of
stuff. So that was out before they even talked to you.
Yeah. Well, that didn't make me mad. I think they should do that. If you got something, maybe draw a few more people. But then I went home and I just said to myself, look, a long time before I started in minor leagues, I got nothing to gain by going back.
Yeah.
And so then I went and seen Paul, and I thanked him very much. Eddie Robinson was his assistant at that time, which we played in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Eddie, look, I just don't want to go down to minor leagues again. Well, I understand that. So I quit.
Mm. How did that, was it, did you feel it was time to go, Bob?
Yeah.
Or, okay, so it wasn't.
Because I had other things in my life. I was on my way at that time to go to California. And I was going to be the marketing director for Continental Baking Company, because I always worked in the wintertime, and I worked for Continental Baking, which is Wonder Bread, Hostess Cake, and all
sure.
that. And so they had told me when I left down there, I called and talked to them. So I said, I'd like to go to California. And they said, okay. And we'll put you as a marketing director out in California. And so it was all set. And in fact, because I was driving their car, because I was still working for them. And I stopped off to visit in Atlanta with a friend of mine in the stockbroker's business, which I always enjoyed. And he asked me, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to California. He said, you in a hurry? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you just stay here a little bit and sell some securities? We got some stuff going on here. I said, okay. And they give me a guarantee at $200 a week or something like that. It's, you know, bill. But and then all of a sudden, I started making a ton of money selling these securities because Atlanta was a very hot town.
Sure.
And Milwaukee was coming down.
Sure.
And I was sitting in the stands and at the end of spring training, because the Yankees came through and played Detroit, and John McHale came out to see
him.
Because he was the president of the Milwaukee Braves at the time. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm just visiting a friend. And he said, you in baseball more? I said, I don't know. He said, how would you like to be the pitching coach for the Atlanta Crackers? Because the Braves can't come down this year. They get held up by law.
Right.
And
he was hanging on.
He says, do that. And well, I said, well, as long as I don't have to give up what I'm doing the other place. And he asked me, and I told him, it's okay, that's no problem. So I worked all that year for the Braves. We had a pretty good team down there, some pretty good pitching, and called me in at the end of the year, wanted to go over the pitchers on the club and everything. I talked and told him about it. He said, well, we'd like you to go to Richmond because Whitlow Wyatt is the pitching coach for Milwaukee, and he's coming back to his hometown. He just wants to coach one more year, but when he leaves, you get the job.
Hmm. In Milwaukee?
No.
Oh, it would have been Atlanta, of course. So
Whitlow Wyatt is from Conyers or someplace.
Yeah.
And so when he retires, he could become a pitching coach. You know, that sounded good to me. And I said, well, I said, John, I said, look, and they offered me a raise. I think I was making $9,000 a year at that time as a coach in Atlanta. And he said, we'll give you $13,000 to go to Richmond. I said, John, I'll tell you something. I said, John, I'm making over $100,000 here. And I said, I'll help you and do anything you want for nothing, but I just can't do it. He said, Bob, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Never can make that much of that out of baseball at that point. But now, usually with spring training, Paul Richards came over to Atlanta, so he remembered because sign stealing and all that.
Yeah.
But there's a picture of me somewhere with him and I sitting behind home plate. And I would be screened at all the pitches for him and tell him. And then he'd call him inside and come back in the room. One of the pitchers at Houston at that time came in and he said, well, I don't do that. He looked at him and said, oh, he had ball language.
He said,
I'm sitting right here. And he just showed me all the things. We called all your signs. Don't tell me. You go down and work on it. But he said, but I used to do that for quite a few years.
Yeah.
I never took a dime. Yeah, I just went down there.
You just kind of hung around.
That's right. And just come down there, and he'd ask me to look at the pitchers and do that.
Hmm.
But then I got out of baseball.
You know, in that book, you were in a book, Where Are They Now?
Yeah.
With O.J. Simpson?
Yeah.
And Bobby Thompson was in there, too. And I know it said when he retired that he had nothing else going for him. And he said, I guess he got into industrial sales or something.
Yeah.
He said, you can only talk so long about the home run, and then you got to tell them what you're going to do for them. So did that whole baseball thing, now, it probably got you in some doors. Oh, everybody wants to talk to Bob. But that doesn't sell.
No. See, I was good at what I was. See, you concentrated pretty much on what I did in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But I was good in the business world while I was in baseball and everything.
Yeah.
And was highly educated. Not with degrees, but highly educated and what to do and how to buy and sell companies, all kinds of stuff.
So it wasn't a shock to you when you had been running parallel?
No, wait a minute. It was a shock when you lived in baseball. But it wasn't a big shock to me because I had a name from the New York Yankees that got me into anywhere I wanted to go.
Sure.
Plus, I knew what the hell I was talking about.
Ah.
And I always had a philosophy that when I went to see somebody in the business world, I mean, I know what I'm going to say. You don't know what you're going to say. So I was never worried about what some questions somebody was going to ask me. Most people fail in the business world because they're out there and they're afraid somebody's going to ask them a question they can't answer. I never was worried about
that. You knew what the question is to expect.
Yeah.
I knew.
In my head, I knew all that. And I had tremendous confidence in my own ability.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's the same thing that got you where you did in baseball.
You got right again. Now you're getting into what the book's all about, okay?
Yeah.
People say, well, I said he had a disaster happen in his life. I said, what did he do? Go off and drink, become drunk? No, because I always had one thing to myself. You can take everything from me physically, but you can't take this from me.
Yeah.
As long as I got this, I'll always make a living doing whatever I want to do.
Yeah. Was that the same? You had some thrills in baseball. You had some thrills in business. Are they the same kind of thrills? Or are they
same identical?
Same thing.
In business world, it's the same thing as playing on a championship team, playing on a winning team.
Hmm.
You got to put your winning team together and you're going to win in a business.
Yeah.
You got to put your winning team together in baseball and you're going to win.
Hmm.
But it's more than just hitting the ball. You can have a lot of people, you know, very good hitters, but, you know, like I see today, the classical thing I remember is when the Braves were playing Philadelphia in the playoffs, and they win this game, they go in the World Series. And that wild left-hand pitcher was pitching for Philadelphia. The catcher for the Braves was up to play. Bases loaded, score tied. Bottom of the ninth inning. That left-hander throws a ball inside, and that catcher jumps out of the way. All he had to do was let the damn ball hit him, and the Braves are in the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I said to myself,
Give one for the team. You know, take one for the team.
God Almighty, I mean, it's over with. You're in the World Series.
Wow.
And he jumped way in the hell out of the way. And next pitch, he flies out, and the Braves and the Phillies beat him.
See, I didn't see that. That is. And I guess it's too easy. You know, you're 70, Bob. I'm 67. To sit back here and say that isn't the way it used to, but it isn't the way it used to be, and it should still.
Here's the reason that you hear. Now, I don't know if they say this because they think it's the right thing to say, but I hear ball players say, "Look, hey, you're messing with my business." I go through the roof when I hear that. It's not your damn business. It's still a game. It's a game that people love to play.
Yeah.
You may think it's your business, and it is your business, but you don't ever say that.
Yeah.
And I hear that. I hear Tommy Glavine say that, and I just want to die.
Mm.
I hear this guy, "Well, we got to go get out here and do our business," you know?
Get it over, like almost sounds like get it over with.
Nobody wants you to come and see you do your business. Nobody wants to come to the ballpark to see you play baseball.
And with some passion, I know with entertainers, when you see somebody up there performing with passion, I mean, they just love it.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. See, I think the ball players today are better than ever. They're stronger. They're in better shape.
Bigger.
They stay in shape year round. We only stayed in shape 7 months a year and had to be back in shape again, or 5 months a year.
That was what spring training was for in the old days.
Yeah, that, get in shape. But see, those guys stay in shape year round. And it's a money game to them, which probably I would be doing the same thing maybe if I was pitching then. I don't know. I'm pitching now. But it's entirely different game. You know, I see guys that don't play. I mean, I've seen guys play. Man, I pitched in your game, Milwaukee. I pitched 9 innings in the 5th game and beat you all in New York. I relieved the very next day in Milwaukee in the 10th inning. Then I came in the very next day again and pitched 7 innings.
That wouldn't happen
today. Oh, hell no, it wouldn't happen. But see, I mean, people say, "Well, did you get tired?" I said, "I never got tired until Shaney's hit the ball to center fielder and Mickey caught in the game was over. Then I got tired."
then there's that almost that letdown, but it's a good letdown. Yeah.
But see, today guys don't want to do that. They don't want to volunteer to get in the bullpen or do anything like that.
Well, then if they're going to change positions, they want more money for it.
It's like the guy in Houston, the second baseman.
Biggio,
they put him out in there and
give me some extra money. And the disabled list, I don't never remember it being like that.
No. Well, there's a lot of reasons for that. From a pitcher's standpoint, my standpoint looking at it, the pitchers are I pitch as high as 230 or 40 pitches in a game and still be throwing just as good on 230, 240 a point. Because my arm was in shape.
Yeah.
We threw a lot. We threw a lot and our arms were in good shape. So we didn't have as many sore arms. Now you had sore arms, I grant you that. But not as much as you have today. If we had 5 guys on disabled list the whole year, that was a
miracle. Right.
Now they got 5 on there all the time. All the time.
Well, maybe it's a matter, too, that I don't know much about the physiology of it, but if your arm is used to throwing 125 pitches, that's kind of what you'll get.
That's right. You know, it's just like your legs. Your legs are going to get in shape. When I go out here and run 10 laps, your legs are going to get in shape because you increase it.
Yeah.
Pitching is the same way. See, I don't think I had a sore arm on the pitching staff in Boston when I was a pitching coach. Because I followed the routine that we had at New York. I mean, you pitch back practice every day in spring training. Mm-hmm. But we timed you how long you threw. And every day we increase it, and every day we increase it,
Yeah.
We made you throw on the sidelines all the time to get the arm in shape,
the
physical arm and shoulders and muscles and everything else. Today they don't do that. You don't do any much pitching.
Yeah, you do your every 4 days, and then that's it.
Well, they do routines, but see, they don't... You only get up to point, force yourself, and I don't think any pitcher pitches 9 innings in spring training anymore. We always had to have 2 9-inning games before we ever went into the spring training was over.
Yeah, complete. Yeah, but now they don't pitch 9 innings anyway.
No way at all. It's a different game.
Yeah.
So you don't throw as much. So your arm gets in shape up to that limit.
Yeah, and your arm kind of expects that many pitches, I guess, and you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Before we forget, this is a complete change of subject, but I while it crosses my mind, I'm in a couple of computer baseball leagues, and I was a little ticked at you the other day, too, because Bob Turley pitched against my team, and you hit two home runs. You hit one off Kurt Simmons and one off Clem Levine.
Oh, my God.
So I think you had four in your whole career, but you had two against. Yeah. But I'm forgetting you, Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was kind of funny. I was going to see you, and then here you popped up against I think it was a 53 league or something like that, when you were just getting started.
Yeah,
so, and one of the things I want to give to you, too, is I mentioned the home runs. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
Oh, who was him? Oh, Sonny Dixon, Bud Byerly, Byerly used to kill the Yankees and pay the Yankees,
And then the rest of them, I'm afraid, are all the home runs hit off of. You remember the first one? Who hit it?
Probably the Chicago White Sox.
Indians.
Okay.
Yeah, let's flip the page there.
Okay.
Yeah. There's somebody in Sabre who has a complete log of every home run ever hit since 1876.
Mm-hmm.
Who was on base? Ray Berry said I mentioned. Ray hit, I think he had four in his life. So he so you might get a kick out of that.
That is
something, yeah. You know, another thing I wanted to ask you about is who scouted you? Now, you mentioned the Brownie scouts.
Well, basically, I was pitching for Eastside High, and there was a guy by the name of Howard Dort. Howard Dort was the local, he had a couple of sons that played baseball and everything, but he was kind of a local bird dog, which you call him.
Oh, yeah.
For the St. Louis Rams.
Mm-hmm.
And so he called Daner, who was a high school pitching coach, high school baseball coach and basketball. And he said, who's the best ball player you got? And Daner said, me. So then they called me and asked me if I would come over for a workout with the Browns. Mm. Then I went over for the workout with the Browns, and Jack Fournier was a guy, he was a head scout.
Oh,
you remember that name?
Sure, I do. I always wondered how to pronounce his last name. He's on my 1920 Cardinals team.
I own him.
Jack Fournier is how he pronounced it. Okay.
He was a minor league pitching. I mean, he was the minor league scout. And so they talked to me, and I was still in high school, so they couldn't sign me. So he said, I'd like to sign me if you would like to. And they told me what they'd pay me, I think. So he said, okay, well, night you graduate, we'll come out to your house and sign you after you're out of high school. So then he sent a guy by the name of Curlbaum out to see me. And we went ahead and signed the contract then.
How did your parents feel about you?
Oh, my mother just loved it.
Yeah.
At the time, because, you know, you think your son gets to play professional baseball. I did too. And so I went out to Class D or even something in baseball.
In Aberdeen,
yeah.
I think.
No.
Or Belleville.
Belleville and the only.
Yeah. You probably got this already,
didn't
you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. So, now, you picked the Browns basically because you were a hometown boy and somebody wants to sign you to...
No, I picked the Browns because they only wanted to offer me a contract. I just wanted to go play baseball, you know. I never thought I would... you never think yourself being that good.
Yeah.
And, all of a sudden somebody offered me to go play professional baseball. I said, let's go.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I went to follow that story, because this is a good story for you. I went to a Yankee tryout camp. They had one of the Yankees in Maryville, Illinois, which is in between Troy, where I was born, East St. Louis, where I was raised, and the Yankees had a tryout camp up there. So I went up there with my uncle, Ralph Turley, who was 2 years older than me, and he was a pitcher and I was a pitcher, so we went up there to pitch at the camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked me at that time. I can't say what they said to Ralph, but they liked me, so we'll get back with you. I said, okay. So then the tryout came with the Browns after that. And the night that I signed, they signed me up. Now, they didn't have an address because my mother and father divorced, they were married. And so the only Turley in the phone book was my uncle at his house.
Oh, okay.
So they sent somebody out to see him and sign with my grandfather. And he signed him up.
No kidding.
Thinking they were signing me, but they were signing my uncle. And I went to Belleville in the Illinois State League, and he went to Marion in the Illinois State League, and we played against each other.
Is that right?
Now, he didn't pitch against me, but we came down there, and I pitched and won the game that night, and went around the clubhouse to get him. Was going to go out and eat, and his bag's packed, and I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "They released me. They told me they signed the wrong tour."
Oh, my goodness. So,
and then, you know, sometimes people, Lou McGuala was the Yankee scout for the area around St. Louis.
What was his name again?
Lou McGuala. McGuala.
McGuala.
McGuala.
Okay.
And later on, he came to me and he says, "You know," he said, "I never would deny or say yes to that." He said, "But Bob, that was the truth." And so the big articles came about it. So it took him a little while. That was 48 until 1955 to get me 7 years later than the Yankees.
I'll be darned. Well, that leads into, of course, you know, that monster. Trade. I mean, that was, I don't know if that's been topped since then.
I think it's been 18 or 19 ball players. I think it's been tied. It might have been tied, but never been beat. Yeah.
Now, what was that? How did you find out that you'd been traded?
Okay. When the season was over, at the end of the 54 season, Paul Richards came over as the general manager.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Dykes was the manager at that time. And I remember Paul Richards called me in the office, and because I was scheduled to pitch the last game of the year, because my record was either 13 or 14 or 14 or 15, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And they was going to leave me a chance of even it up. And so then I went in, Paul said, I said, "Paul," he asked me what I was going to do that night. I said, "Well, I'm going to stay here in Baltimore. I'm going to buy a home here, and I'm going to work for Heckin Company," which is in the wintertime, because we all work. You don't make any money.
Yeah.
And he said, "That's good." He said, "I want, because we're going to build this team around you." Okay, now that was probably going to say last week in September or first of October. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when it was. And so I said, "Okay." And he said, "You're not going to gain anything by pitching another game. This is going to mean nothing." And he says, "You might danger because you pitch a lot all year. I can't tell you what to do, but I wouldn't pitch a game." So I went back and told Jimmy Dykes that I said, "Jim, I don't talk to Paul, he only pitched it, no problem, Bob."
Mm-hmm.
That's when Don Larson pitched that day and lost his 21st game.
Oh.
That's right.
He thanked you for that.
Yeah. So my son was born October the 28th, and he must have been right around in that area, 28th, they'll say November the 5th, somewhere in that area, because I was home watching television, and watching the Tonight Show, but it wasn't Johnny Carson.
Steve Allen?
Yeah. And he was doing the show and watching. All of a sudden, my picture would flash on the screen. Bob Turley traded the New York Yankees.
Oh, my goodness. That's how you found out?
Yeah, that's how I found out about it. And people say, weren't you mad because you got traded? No, I wasn't mad. Hell, I got crawled with the New York. I mean, you're kidding me. Go with the Cubs. I think they averaged 2.5 runs a game for me all that year. To go to a ball club like that, you get crazy.
So it's going from famine to feast.
Sure, yeah, and going over there. So that's when I found out it was true.
Oh, and Don Larson went with you.
Don was in the trade. Yeah. The guys from
Dick Krahowski,
Billy Hunter,
Jim Fridley,
Marlon Stewart.
You and Don were the guys who really ended up.
Right. Don, myself, Hunter.
Billy Hunter played for.
Billy Hunter got shipped out and broke his ankle.
Mike Blitzka was.
Yeah.
But Al Del Greco. Well, they had Ted Del Guercio.
That's it. Ted. Wow. His right hand hit a little guy.
So they got Harry Bird and McDonald and Miller and Fred. I guess they helped him a little bit.
Gus Triantis and I were in the army together. We just
Right?
We got out of the army together. He went to New York. I went to Baltimore. And then we. He was my catcher in the Army, and then we flip-flopped. He went to Baltimore, I went to New York,
So, and kind of lived happily.
Gene Woodley was the main character there.
That went to the
Gus
Browns.
Trandis, to Baltimore. And the catcher, Smith, Hal Smith.
Hal Smith was. I just wonder how it had to be the reverse effect on
that. It was a Miller.
Willie Miranda, Cal Segrist.
It was a Miller. Bob Miller. And Bob and I played baseball at the end of
Bill Miller, it says here.
Bill, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We were in Puerto Rico at the end of the 53 season, pitching down there. Crazy Miller, they called him.
Is that right?
He never said that.
How one of the, and I guess we're just about to run out. And Bob, I really appreciate all the time you've given me here. Umpires, who is your favorite?
No question, Runge, Ed Runge.
Is that right? Al, wasn't it?
Al, not Ed.
Ed Runge.
And best, he was a pitcher. McGowan was the other one. McGowan and Runge were my two favorites. Hmm. They were the type of umpires that didn't make you, you know, get inside the strike zone that much. You could pitch outside the strike zone. As long as you was consistent, and they were consistent calling.
Yeah.
And they want the hitters to swing, not stand up and take pitch after pitch and make a long game. So they're both pitchers. Hmm. Pitchers, umpires. So they were really good. I think, to be honest with you, Runge, I wish there was some way I could find this out, but I don't think I ever lost a game in my major league career with him behind the plate.
Is that right?
I get all kinds of shutouts of that I remember now. Because your memory gets slow.
If you have a pencil handy, let me, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this on, Sabre has an internet thing.
Great. I love this.
And everybody does research on everything. I'll make a note of that.
Yeah,
and I will.
Ed Runge would be the best, because McGowan retired. His son, later on, umpired in the major league, but he's also retired.
Oh.
Look at the excursion boat coming back in.
I don't know if anybody has research on there or not, but I will. Do you have an email address? Oh, look at that.
That's both coming in. The excursion boat goes down the
island. That's beautiful. Do you have an email address?
No, I don't.
Okay, I can get back to you anyway. By the old-fashioned way, telephone.
Yeah.
And would the batters probably wouldn't agree that Ed Runge was there for
No, they were not. But I'll tell you, some of them, you know, the routine guys would holler all the time, but some of them didn't mind because he was consistent. You knew what he was going to do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would guess the thing that would drive everybody nuts is, and that's what the complaint is today, is you don't know how they're going to call a game.
No, the umpires, it's hard to say. I don't think they're any better than they are today, but they are very consistent. And there are some of them. I don't know who that would be in the major league today.
Yeah.
Would be that consistent. Then there were some bad umpires. But I'm not going to name names like that because they were just, they had rabbit ears, and you could say, well, they'd beat you the rest of your life. I mean, they'd do anything.
And make you pay for it.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
Did they, they tend to last long tours?
Oh, sure. I had one umpire that it was so bad with me, and I never did nothing to him.
Yeah.
I wasn't a yeller from the dugout or anything. He took it against me, and they never again allowed me to pitch with him behind the plate.
Is that right?
No.
Wow.
Good management knows that.
They said, well, I never thought of that.
Yeah. Good management. They take get certain pitchers to work with certain umpires.
Match the pitchers of the umpire. Interesting.
Yeah.
Forgive me for bouncing around again, but by what I thought occurs in my head, and I mentioned I in Milwaukee in 1957-58,
yeah.
And one of the things that was really impetus, they still talk about it back there. We talk about the Braves more than the Brewers now for some, was the infamous Bush League. Was that Hank Bauer or was that?
No. We was on a bus and we just flew in. Yeah, we came in by train.
You went to Browns, plane. You trained at Browns Lake.
Browns Lake. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they were having a parade before the World Series started. So they asked us to be in the parade. So the club agreed. And so we were sitting there at the parade and in the bus, the whole team, we've been traveling, either flying or probably flying, but we've been sitting there now for an hour and a half, and nobody has showed up. Showed up. They're waiting on the mayor, and the mayor hadn't showed up, that, if I remember right. I might be wrong on that. Then all of a sudden, some representative of the parade came in our bus and said, "Fellas, we're sorry, we're waiting on so-and-so, it'll be just another 15 minutes. And Gus Monch, the trainer, said, "Well, this is really Bush."
So it was Gus.
Gus Monch is the one that said it.
And it was.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't talking about Milwaukee.
No.
He was talking about the situation.
That's right, it's really Bush. It had nothing to do with, this is a Bush city.
Yeah.
This was Bush.
And then
they blew that off.
Well, I knew that. I mean, nobody, they complained when Kareem at that time wanted to leave Milwaukee and go someplace else because it was too small. It wasn't a put down. It's a small city.
Yeah,
I mean, compared to New York or Los Angeles or something.
Yeah, that's like people saying that. Oh, I don't know why the Dodgers ever lost. Well, that's Brooklyn. You don't? My God Almighty. I mean, they get to go out there and they give them all that land, that there's oil underneath that land, they ever drill them, and they get a brand new stadium, it's financed and everything.
Called money.
Yeah, and they said, and all they had here is a ballpark to hold 35,000 people, no way to do anything with anything. Give me a break.
What traditions? I just see it, it really got a bad feeling. You see, they changed the, and even though it's the New Comiskey Park,
They
changed it to a corporate name now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what causing this thing to go.
Well, you know, people.
I don't, $60 million or something, do I blame them? But it's disappointing. Well, Bob, I think we've covered most in my, just two quick ones, if you don't mind. One is, what were your recollections of Don Larson's game? I know that's been beaten to death, too, but just another, and you probably talked about it.
Because obviously I remember it real well.
Yeah.
The other parts of it you don't see in the papers, you don't remember, is that he started the second or third game of that World Series, and Casey took him out of the game. And he was winning 3-1 or 4-1 or something like that. And he took him out in the third or fourth inning. Larson got mad. Like loud.
As you would have.
Yeah, I would too. So they took him out of the game. And so I said, heck with that. So Don was noted for drinking a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't carouser with women, but he bummed around with the guys who were either the police officers and the guys who worked in the stands or ordinary people, you know. And I remember he said, man, they'll pitch again. You know? And I remember that morning playing a day game, and he locked right next to me. And what they did, they never tell us. You knew you were going to pitch, but they didn't tell you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and they wouldn't tell you. And when you came in the clubhouse, Jim Turner would take a baseball, or Frank Corsetti would, he'd do stuff, and bring it over and put it in your shoes. And when you walked in, and look down there and you see the baseball, new baseball, and you knew you were pitching that game. Nobody had to tell you that.
Okay.
So I remember sitting there, and he came in, and I honestly don't think he'd been to bed all night.
I think his recollections were similar, yeah.
Yeah, and he walked there, and he looked down at the ball, he looked at me, and he walked right in the clubhouse, and then lay down, went to bed on the train, and slept. Well, the game starts at 1 o'clock. I think it was 1, might have been 2, whatever the time was, but he did that till 30 minutes before the game, got a little rub down, went out, warmed up, pitched a perfect game.
Now, when were you guys aware that it was a perfect game?
Well, you always get aware of that type of stuff around the middle of the game.
Yeah.
From the 5th and 6th inning, guys pretty much know what's going on then. Yeah, but that was a perfect game, not just the other one.
Yeah, and in the World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in college at that time. I remember watching it on TV saying,
best game I ever pitched in my major league career was in the World Series. It was the next day against the Brooklyn Dodgers. In Brooklyn, Clem Levine was a pitcher against me.
Yeah.
I got beat 1-0 in 10 innings, set a World Series strikeout record the next day, but nobody remembers that. But what they do now is everybody comes up to me and says, I remember your perfect game because I won all the games. And that's the only thing he did his whole career. Okay?
Sad timing, Bob.
Yeah. So, and the next day, you look at it, was either a 3-hitter or a 4-hitter. I'm not quite sure, but I remember that. Oh, this is my wife, Carolyn.
Oh, hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
Hey,
Barry.
Nice.
Working right
through
lunch.
Oh, I'm heading off pretty soon here because...
Would you like a coke or something?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you, though. Just
I didn't offer him anything.
But I
make some coffee?
Well, I find that my wife's a decorator also. She plays the piano. She doesn't paint. So I feel right at home with you.
Does she sing?
Yes, she does.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she sings in a bel canto thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So... Every,
your home is up north, though, right?
We live in Milwaukee, yeah. We're just down for the month. We come down every month to Naples.
Every month?
Every February.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But she's involved in tree commissions and things like that back there, so she's got to save our city.
Oh,
she can't
yes.
be away for more than a month.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, she would enjoy seeing the place. She's, like I said, she's a decorator. So.
Well, we haven't done anything yet, but the floor, I just love the floor and we need some color and things out here, so it'll be fun.
So you're the head decorator in the house?
Well,
yeah, Bob says you're better at that, but he was better at pitching.
He was better at teaching, okay. And I think it's, I spend the money. I think it's scripture or something like, Hezekiah 5:4, doesn't it say, the man shall make the money and the woman shall spend it?
If you say it's true, right? Yeah.
No, I was going to tell you that Junior Gilliam got the first hit. Ena Slaughter was playing left field for us. He came over from the National League.
Yeah.
And he hit a high fly ball.
And he dropped it.
No, he didn't drop it. He lost in the sun. He turned his back and the ball dropped down. That was the first hit. Second hit was by Clem Labine. And it was...
Was he not a good hitter?
No. But he hit a routine fly ball down the left field line. And Ebbets Field, it's real close to the foul.
Mm-hmm.
He ran over, hit the wall, fell down, and the ball landed right on his side. That was the second hit.
Oh, my.
And then the third hit, the one, I remember, and there might have been another inning, but I don't think so. But the third hit was, Junior Gilliam was on second, and I think Duke Snyder was on first, two outs. Jackie Robinson was a hitter. He had a line drive right at Enos. All Enos had to just stand there and catch the ball, but he hustled in, and the ball went over his head, and we got beat 1-0.
That had to hurt. You could not have been a happy camper.
No, not really.
Okay. So that was a little bit easier for him.
Yeah, I think because, you know, we played a lot of day games. You don't play that anymore.
Yeah. And no doubleheaders anymore.
No, only if you get a rain down.
Yeah.
Because they have to make them because you got no days off. You're playing Saturdays. So in that sense, it was nicer. But on the other sense, too, is that long road trips.
Yeah.
In those days when... And over here, and we played, you know, we'd go and play a four, you know, Friday night, Saturday, and up ever since, we'd play four games with these people.
How, what life on the road,
uh-huh.
What was that like? Because that's something that's unique to you guys. It's not, probably, maybe basketball players a little bit, but football players don't have a life on the road, you know, they go, but baseball players may be unique.
It was unique. All I can speak is for our team, the New York and the Browns, and mostly New York. But it was quite enjoyable because we'd leave New York and we'd get on the train. We'd all have sleepers.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd get in there, read a book, and go to bed. And there would be a dining car in there. We'd all eat in the dining car. We'd all eat together. We'd all talk baseball. We'd go to bed, get the next morning, be in a city and get in a cab and go to the hotel and you'd be there. All the hotels during that time had lobbies with seats and chairs.
Mm-hmm.
We would sit around. Nobody would bother us. And we'd talk and we'd eat in the hotels and everything like that. Today, some ball players don't even stay at the same hotels. Some ball players have their own private room. They don't want to room with anybody else. And it was all different types of things. And we all, I remember Rizzuto, myself, and Yogi, a lot of us guys loved to go to the movies. So we'd go to movies every day and go see the game and that night play the ball game. And then you'd come back to the hotel.
You didn't play video games, not like they do today.
No video games, no loud records, machines, or anything like that. But none of that stuff that came about. But, you know, you'd sit and watch television. Television would go off at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you'd go to sleep. But you'd stay up. And some guys would sleep late in the morning because they had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
And some guys would get up early, like me. I got up early every morning, go down, have breakfast, and, you know, and sit and read the newspaper, and then come back up after a while.
So there's kind of a rhythm to it.
Mm-hmm.
That you got.
A regular routine that you would do.
Yeah.
We could get walk down the streets and nobody would bother you like they, you know, today they'd overwhelm you. They, here comes a Yankee ball player, here comes the Boston Red Sox or, you know, Dodgers, somebody, they just overwhelm you, you just got to go hide.
Yeah. But it was obviously a different lifestyle when you were home again. Is that like going to work?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and when you're home, then it's just like a regular job. A lot of guys didn't bum around when you were home. because they all lived in separate places. They all went home to their families.
Mm-hmm.
They'd carpool into the ballpark and things like that.
Yeah.
But it was an entirely different. It was like a 9-to-5 job.
Hmm. But the road trips were, it sounded like you lived with these guys.
Yeah.
And so you were together all the time.
Yeah.
So
it was the way I could really emphasize what it was like, it's like playing college baseball, high school baseball. We hung around with the guys.
Yeah.
When you go on
yeah.
the road, and the families weren't involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you'd do a lot of crazy things, laugh and having fun. Doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean I'm and having sex with everybody all night. Some
yeah.
guys were like that, you know, some guys weren't.
Yeah, it'd be tempting to be out there and be a, you know, a hero type.
Yeah.
What was it like for your kids, Bob? Is that something they adjust to? That's what Dad does? And
yeah. When, of course, the first son was born in 54 when I was with Baltimore.
Hmm.
So it took him about 3 years before he knew what it was about.
Yeah.
But, you know, he still talks today to going down to St. Petersburg. My oldest son, Terry, talks about playing with Whitey Ford's kids.
Is that right?
Yeah. Kids, and they all played baseball and things like that.
Yeah.
Then I used to take the two sons that were born at that time and take them to Yankee Stadium when they get a little older, and we'd play baseball out in the center field when nobody was in the stands, and we'd go out and play around the monuments, and we'd do a lot of things, and they remember all of that.
And that was meaningful for them even at that young age.
Yeah, it was good memories for them. They can remember all of that.
And
then I remember when I went to Los Angeles Angels. I took the oldest boy with me. He went on the road with the bat boy for the Angels.
Oh, really?
He wore Allie
Pearson.
Pearson. Yeah,
Abby. Yeah,
because he was so Albie. Yeah,
yeah.
So he was so little that his uniform fit my son real good. And he was the bat boy. He wore his uniform. All
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, let's jump ahead to that little bit. You were with the Yankees through 62.
Right.
And obviously, you know, just the way you talk, I mean, it might sound, the pride of the Yankees might sound corny, but nevertheless, obviously it was there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then 63, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
How did that?
Well, that was kind of, that's a sad point in your life.
I had
my arm operated on at the end of the 61 season. Yeah, 61 season. And then I pitched in 62, but I didn't get to pitch much because I didn't pitch much in either 61 or 62.
Yeah, and 72 innings in 61 and 69 innings in 62.
Yeah. I had a bad arm. My arm got hurt in the Pittsburgh World Series when we got beat. That was 1960.
That's the Mazeroski.
Right. And so I didn't pitch much in 61 because the arm was pretty sore. And I pitched some games, some games good, some games bad. So then I had to operate on at the end of the 61 season. And then 62 came back with them, and I pitched a little bit. But I didn't get to pitch a lot.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more you got to pitch.
Ah.
Because when you get older, it takes your muscles really got to be worked on. They don't come back as much as
not
they
as
do.
Elastic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's why you see guys like Clemens. They have a workout schedule that'll kill you. They have to do that just to stay in shape, like the 25-year-old has. They've got it naturally.
Gotcha. Yeah, Nolan Ryan was another one of those. I guess.
Nolan Ryan
yeah.
and football. You got Rice and you got a lot of guys like that. But anyway, I didn't get to pitch much, and so I then asked Ford Frick permission to go to Puerto Rico to play baseball.
I did see an article about that.
And he allowed me to go down there. I pitched the opening night at the Roberto Clemente Stadium where Roberto got killed.
Oh, really?
And so I went out and pitched that opening night.
Yeah.
I was only down there 2 days because it was in the World Series. It's a start. I was 2 days. I got down and pitched the first game. Came back to the hotel, and in those days they had little cubby holes where they put your keys.
Yeah,
keys,
sure.
And phone messages, and there was a pink message in there for me. They handed it to me, read it from Roy Haney, and said, "You've been traded to Los Angeles Angels." That's all I ever heard from the Yankees.
Is that
so?
Right?
That was very disheartening because I
were a Yankee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd done a lot for the club, stealing. I was a player representative.
Sure.
I could go on and on. So I thought I was really committing to the team and everything. I even talked to management at that time, and I won't get into names who I talked to, but I said, "Look, let me go down to Puerto Rico and I'll pitch. And then I'll get my arm in better shape and come back spring training and keep me on the roster, or take me off the roster if you want to. And when I go down there, if it doesn't work out, then you can make me a coach or something in baseball." So they kind of didn't agree, but didn't say no. It's kind of like, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then when I'm down there, you know, just 2 days and gone, you know I was traded a long time before that. But they can't announce it until after the World Series.
Oh, wow.
So while they were agreeing with me, they knew I was going to be gone.
Yeah. So you had to feel a little bit.
I thought I got let down very much. Yeah. But as I matured in life a little bit further in the business world, I understood it. So that didn't bother me no more.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the beginning, it really, it's one of the, I'll prove you some of the guns I can really do it. You know, and that's another thing I say in my the motivational book. I said most people are driven, successful people, are driven because they want to prove something to somebody. They're not driven for money. They're driven because they go to prove someone in life, their mother, father, brother, maybe a coach or somebody like told them they were no good and they never could do it. And they're driven by to do something good to prove that they're
wrong. Yeah.
Most people are like that way. And if you know what the key is, if you're in management like I am and motivational, then you play upon that and you really get a lot out of people. But anyway.
The best they got.
Yeah, that's an important one.
Well, yeah, and I want to talk about that a little bit too. You ended up with the Red Sox that year.
Right. Around July, something like that, the Angels released me. They weren't going anywhere. And I was probably the highest paid pitcher on the club. And they released me. I remember Gene Autry, who was an idol as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, come out there and sit on the bench with me. He was actually tears and crying. He said, I don't want you to go, Bob. I want you, because he loved the Yankees. You know,
yeah.
And he said, I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I had no part of this decision. If I did, you'd still be here. But they cut down and brought some minor league kids and stuff like that. Same time, Boston wanted to sign me, but I had to wait until, I think it's 7 days expired. So see if nobody picks you up.
Oh, in the waivers?
Yeah, on the waivers. Yeah. And so that didn't occur. And so then they told me to come up and I signed and pitched the rest of the year with that. Then when the season was over, they came to me and said, well, look, we'd like you to be the pitching coach here. Of course, and then you can stay in baseball. And
is that something on your list of things that you might want to do?
Some of the things I wanted, when you get them, they said, you can pitch too if you want to. So I got in real good shape. I was in excellent shape, went to UMA, Arizona. But to do my job good as a pitching coach is an all-time, it's all-consuming.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't do that. And so I went up there and I was a pitching coach for that ball club.
Okay.
And that was 1964.
Now, I thought I read something that you there was a little bit of a comeback thing that you...
Well, I went from there and then Paul Richards called me. And he wanted me to, they were going into Houston in a new ballpark and he was a general manager and manager.
Houston, yeah.
Yeah, and he wanted me to come down to spring training. And because I was fairly young at that time, so that was 34 years old. And he wanted me to come down here and pitch. And if it didn't work out too well, he was going to make me a coach. And so I was in the spring training with him down there. First two or three games, I pitched real well because I had always been in spring training in shape. I never went out of shape. I didn't go down there and get killed.
Yeah.
And so I did well. And then I pitched in mediocre. But what happened to me is that I didn't get tired. I mean, I didn't get sore. I didn't care whether I won or lost. When you lose that winning attitude, and I knew this was it with me.
Yeah, so that part of it was... We talked earlier about the body and the mind. Yeah. Both of them are important, and they need to win.
Yeah, I didn't have a... It didn't bother me if I lost. I wasn't happier if I won.
Yeah.
That big winning desire was gone, and then right about a... 4 days, 5 days before spring camp broke up, they called me in and they wanted me to go to Durham, which was their, minor league team was. Then we go down there and pitch and get myself in real good shape pitching there, and then they bring me back. And then they said, well, if you don't win there, down there, then we'll bring you back as a coach. So, I was almost tempted to do that until about 30 minutes after that, all the writers came around me. Durham rider and everything, and about I was going to be the opening day pitcher and all that kind of stuff.
So that was out before they even talked to you.
Yeah. Well, that didn't make me mad. I think they should do that if they got something, maybe draw a few more people. But then I went home and I just said to myself, look, I had a long time before I started in minor leagues. I got nothing to gain by going back.
Yeah.
And so then I went and seen Paul, and I thanked him very much. Eddie Robinson was his assistant at that time, which we played in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Eddie, look, I just don't want to go down to minor leagues again. He said, well, I understand that. So I quit.
Mm. How did that, was it, did you feel it was time to go, Bob?
Yeah,
or, okay,
so it wasn't. Because I had other things in my life. I was on my way at that time to go to California. And I was going to be the marketing director for Continental Baking Company, because I always worked in the wintertime, and I worked at Continental Baking, which is one of the bread, hostess cake, and all
that. Sure.
And so they had told me when I left down there, I called and talked to them. So I said, I'd like to go to California. And they said, okay. And we'll say, we'll put you as a marketing director out in California. And so it was all set. And in fact, as I was driving their car, because I was still working for them, and I stopped off to visit in Atlanta with a friend of mine in the stockbroker's business, which I always enjoyed. And he asked me, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to California. He said, you in a hurry? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you just stay here a little bit and sell some securities? We got some stuff going on here. I said, okay. And they give me a guarantee, I think $200 a week or something like that. It's, little. But and then all of a sudden, I started making a ton of money selling these securities, because Atlanta was a very hot town.
Sure.
Milwaukee was coming down.
Sure.
And I was sitting in the stands at the end of spring training, because the Yankees came through and played Detroit, and John McHale came out to see me.
Yeah.
Because he was the president of the Milwaukee Braves at the time. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm just visiting a friend. And he said, are you in baseball more? I said, I don't know. He said, how would you like to be a pitching coach for the Atlanta Crackers? Because the Braves can't come down this year. They get held up by law.
Right.
And
we were hanging out.
Yeah. And he says, do that. And well, I said, well, as long as I don't have to give up what I'm doing the other place. And he asked me, and I told him, it's okay. That's no problem. So I worked all that year for the Braves. We had a pretty good team down there, some pretty good pitching. And called me in at the end of the year, wanted to go over the pitchers on the club and everything. I talked and told him about it. He said, well, we'd like you to go to Richmond because Whitlow Wyatt is a pitching coach from Milwaukee. And he's coming back to his hometown, just wants to coach one more year. But when he leaves, you get the job.
In Milwaukee?
No.
Oh, it would have been Atlanta, of course.
See, Whitlow Wyatt is from Conyers or someplace.
Yeah.
And so when he retires, he could become a pitching coach. That sounded good to me. And I said, well, I said, John, I said, look, and they offered me a raise. I think I'd make $9,000 a year at that time as a coach in Atlanta. And he said, we'll give you $13,000 to go to Richmond. I said, John, I'll tell you something. He said, John, I'm making over $100,000 a year. I said, I'll help you and do anything you want for nothing, but I just can't do it. He said, Bob, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Never can make that much of them. I got out of baseball at that point. But now, you see, with spring training, Paul Richards came over to Atlanta, so he remembered, because sign stealing and all that.
Yeah.
But there's a picture of me somewhere with him and I sitting behind home plate, and I would be screened at all the pitches for him and tell him. And then he'd call him aside and come back and throw one of the pitchers at Houston at that time. And he said, well, I don't do that. He looked at me and said, what you said? Oh, he had ball behind it.
He said,
I'm sitting right here. He just showed me all the things. We called all your signs. Don't tell me. You go down and work on it. But he said, but I used to do that for quite a few years.
Yeah.
I never took a dime. Yeah, I just went down there.
You just kind of hung around.
That's right. And just come down there, and he'd ask me to look at the pictures and do that. But then I got out of baseball.
You know, in that book, you were in a book, Where Are They Now?
Yeah.
With O.J. Simpson?
Yeah.
And Bobby Thompson was in there too. And I know it said when he retired that he had nothing else going for him. And he said, I guess he got into industrial sales or something. Yeah. He said, you can only talk so long about the home run. Yeah.